I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about recycling programs here in Central Indiana. My guests will be Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, and Greenwood Mayor Mark Meyer. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about recycling efforts here in Central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers, and joining us by phone is Lori Council with Cummins. Welcome to all of you.
Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So I'll start with Allison first on this. One of the things, I mean, it's odd because it's so much part of our lives now with the blue bins and all of that sort of stuff that signals it. This, that there was a time, at least in several of our lifetimes, when recycling seemed like a really, really radical concept. So I guess what I'd like to start with before we dive into the particulars of any programs is what that's a fairly significant, that we even think in these terms. I know we haven't made the progress that a lot of people would like, but the fact that we think in these terms is a significant cultural shift. What produced that? I'll start with Allison, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on it.
So the focus on recycling and the expansion of recycling in sort of the minds of individuals is really a testament to people's increased awareness about the impact that their decisions and their consumptive habits have on our environment and the power that their choices and daily habits can have in their communities and on the planet. So I think that as that ethic and awareness has increased, people's willingness and desire to recycle has also increased. So I think you used to have, you know, the concept of recycling was just maybe some reuse types of things or things you did at home, and now it's much broader category. It's curbside recycling. It's electronics waste recycling. It's composting. It's industrial recycling. So the concept of recycling is really a giant topic.
Lori, how did it really begin to penetrate corporate culture in this country?
Well, thanks, John. You know, since we're a global company, obviously employees who visit our headquarters down here in Columbus come from all over. And there are countries, obviously, where employees are used to doing it. When we've done employee surveys, we found that employees who are environmentally engaged at home also tend to be environmentally engaged at work. So we have always tried to treat the employee holistically, work, home, and the community. And so obviously, we did our big environmental analysis in 2013 and 2014, really understood our waste footprint. And, we established our first sustainability goals. And two of the seven were, in fact, over waste. One was increasing recycling rate, and the other was a zero disposal, which is even tougher, actually, than zero landfill, because we will only incinerate if it's net energy positive. So, yes, it is, like Allison said, it's been a cultural change. But quite honestly, when people come to our global headquarters in Columbus or to our distribution headquarters in Indianapolis, they, you know, they want, you know, they see, you know, it's waste is a very visible thing, and they want to see, and they're happy to see the recycling bins. Down here in Columbus, we have, some of the buildings have different setups, but we've tried, just like we did with our first energy goal, to really make it visible. And so one of our more successful projects that have been replicated in many sites have been what we call the dumpster dive, where we literally go through the trash. I was digging through the trash up there in Franklin, and we put out on the lawn, here's everything that was in the trash. And, oh, by the way, everything that was a trash, 85% of that could have been recycled. And when you show that to people really visually, I think it makes an impact that, oh my gosh, I could do better. And Cummins put out all these nice bins with some signage, and now they've tried to make it easy for me, so I'm going to want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Greg, a couple of generations ago, an enterprise like yours you know, would have been considered an act of madness.
Kind of still is today. I think really this recognition that there is some level of revenue in our recycle stream. If you come in my plant on any given day, I probably have more gold per ton than 50 or so tons you would dig out of an ore mine. So there's these revenue streams, copper, aluminum, steel, plastics, that is complicated. It's not an easy to uncouple the precious metals and the other material from the devices and things that we throw away. But I think that was one of the key drivers of the wake up of recycling. As the rest of the world began to buy our trash and pay to have our waste shipped overseas so they could use the raw materials out of it to create something new. And so I think that's a real drive, one of the real major drivers that has woken up industry, people like Cummins, I hope, to begin to look at how we reuse material in our manufacturing process.
And Mayor Myers, I'm guessing if we went back in time 50 years ago, recycling would not have been anywhere on the, you know, the mayor of Greenwood's priority list. But it is for you now. Why? What changed?
We didn't have a mayor 50 years ago.
Well, that would be a problem, too. Okay.
Okay. No, what has changed is we are changing the culture in Greenwood. It was just 2 years ago that we shifted from the little 18-gallon tote that's sent outside to now we have 96-gallon containers at every home. And when we started this process, you know, we got a lot of pushback again. But what we found over the last 2 years is people who are using recycling has gone from 5,700 households to 9,000 households are starting to recycle in Greenwood. And what that's done is two things. It's brought the amount of recycling material up about 20 tons, and at the same time, it has dropped the amount of garbage by about 20 tons. So we do it together with our waste hauler. We take those recycling bins every 2 weeks, and we found a huge change in that. But even a step further, I mean, 50 years ago, I remember I was born, you know, the leaves were either burnt or you bagged them up and they went in the trash. Well, now the city has a process where a part of a service that's offered for free to our residents is we do free leaf and limb pickup. We do leaf pickup for about 8 weeks in the fall, but we do limb pickup year-round so that people have the opportunity to get rid of that, and that's a city service. What we do with all those is we bring them back to a mulch pile. We make mulch, and we turn around and give it to our residents for free. So it's kind of a holistic picture of what we can do in the city to make the city a cleaner, healthier place for people to come in and live, work, and play.
Well, and by my math, if you move from, what, 5,700 to 9,000 households, that's somewhere around a 60-65% increase.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of penetration is that for your community then?
I think there's about 20,000 households in the city.
So you're getting close to 50%.
Yeah, then we're getting close to 50%. And we offer the bins to people for free.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's already a part of one of the bills they receive every month anyway, so it's a service they're paying for and we want them to take advantage of. And when we first switched, I find this really interesting, is the number. When we first switched, there was a lot of pushback because people didn't want those big 96-gallon bins. We offer a smaller one as well now, and still the number of users has increased by 3,000. So we're still pushing it every month. We're pushing out buck slips in the mailers, trying to get more people involved. We're really trying to push it.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about recycling programs here in Central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Terry has done and find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Terry writes, "Where can we recycle batteries?" I'll throw that one to Allison.
Yeah, I knew I'd get at least one of these types of questions on today's program. So the question about batteries, my follow-up question to Terry would be, what kind of battery are you talking about? Are you talking about a car battery, or are you talking about like a AA from your remote control at your house? Assuming it's a AA battery, your local tox drop location, and if you're in Marion County, the city of Indianapolis runs that program. They will take batteries at those events and those locations. And if you're looking to recycle car batteries, that would be probably considered household hazardous waste. You could talk with them as well for that. So it really depends on the type of battery, the quantity of battery, and where you're located. So that's not the simple answer that everyone is looking for when they ask a recycling question, but it's nuanced.
Is there a place online that, I see Greg raising
his hand. Well, I will jump in. We take these batteries, but it is complicated because lithium gets mixed with alkaline, and, you know, often it's difficult, you know, even for us to know the difference between the batteries. So where there is alkaline batteries or car batteries, they are very recyclable. We will take them at Recycle Force at 1255 Roosevelt. My team listening now is having a heart attack because people will come. We have to sort other batteries, but the tox drop is another really good place to take it, but so do they have to figure out how to sort. So where people can learn to sort their batteries before they bring them, mm-hmm. It helps a lot.
Lori, I'm going to ask, because I know we're going to lose you after this first segment. When you talked about doing the dumpster dive and pulling out 85% and saying this could have been recycling impact, does Cummins have targets now for the amount of material that it wants to reclaim, and on what sort of schedule do you hope to hit those targets?
Yes, we most certainly do. Our goals were part of our 2014 sustainability plan. So again, we had two waste goals, so that shows you how important two out of the seven. To increase the recycling rate to 95%, we're currently at about 90% here in as the data is 2017. And also, like I said, we had a goal for zero disposal, which I realize isn't exactly a jazzy word, but it was what I described. It's even a step above landfill. And we have a goal there of 30 sites by 2020. And, you know, we've worked really hard at it. The sites that get certified, we have we're a database company, so we have a very structured program for how the goals are managed and achieved. And if you're a site, let's just say you're one of our Columbus sites, if you make it 1 year, you have to be recertified. And so not only do we have those two goals, but clearly as we announce our next generation plan, a lot of it too will be around waste minimization. We very much believe in the waste management hierarchy where you go through the reduce, the reuse, the recycle, and disposal. And so we have a lot of initiatives underfoot that we hope to be announcing soon that talks about getting at that first part of the hierarchy, which is reducing waste.
And, Lori, since I am going to lose you here in a minute, I'll ask, can you give us a hint of what some of those new goals might be?
Again, it kind of goes back to looking at whether it's in product design, whether it's in plastics, whether it's in reusable packaging, those kinds of things where it's like beyond just, recycling them, how can we better reuse them or even reduce them? So those are the kinds of things that you'll see in terms of wasting materials and whether, we just avoid a use in the first place or think of a better reuse for it. And so recycle and disposal are the last, are steps three and four, and we're really trying to get at one and two. And, with a global footprint with close to, 100 manufacturing facilities, 60,000 employees, there's a lot of opportunity to really make an impact. When you see some of the pictures that our own employees, take from around the world, we're really committed to doing the right thing for all stakeholders. And while it's very easy for us to have kind of a lens here in just Indiana, when you see some of these pictures mm-hmm. of the water bottles in the ocean and kids on piles of trash and are, you know, just outside some of our own communities, it really tugs at your heart to want to do the right thing for stakeholders.
We are talking about recycling programs in Central Indiana today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers, and we have been joined by Lori Council with Cummins. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about recycling programs in Central Indiana. My guests are Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, and Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Tony has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tony, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
Regarding the curbside recycling, I had heard from a colleague that the curbside recycling in Marion County was going in the same landfill that our trash was, and I wanted to know if there was any truth to that.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Tony. Allison, you're leaning in.
Yeah, we get that question quite a bit, Tony, so I appreciate you asking this and giving me an opportunity to address it. I have good news. No, your recycling is not going into the landfill. If you're participating in a curbside collection program here in Marion County, a separate truck comes to pick those materials up, drives them to a materials recovery facility known in the industry as a MRF. And that's essentially a processing center where they sort the material through a variety of mechanical and manual methods. And those materials are separated by their type of commodity. They are baled together. So plastic jugs would get baled together. Glass would get sorted and put together. Paper and cardboard would get baled separately as well. And then brokers at those facilities find buyers for those materials, and they are purchased and shipped out from that location to go into manufacturing processes. So in Marion County, about 10% of households subscribe to Republic's curbside system. And there's always a little bit of residual in the process where people put the wrong thing in the recycling bin. So it's really important for folks to understand what should go in the bin and what should not go in the bin so that the highest value is captured out of those recyclable materials and there's low rates of contamination. But by and large, the materials that you are putting in your bin, assuming you're doing it correctly, is being recycled. And most likely it's being recycled within the state of Indiana.
Are there places or communities that have exceptional success in terms of recycling? I'm remembering, I think it was Seattle a long time ago, got a lot of national ink and national attention because they tried to do a fundamental shift in the mindset of people and say, okay, what we're going to do here is we'll pick up your recyclables for free, but we're going to charge you on a volume basis for the trash because that we see that as the way cost is, so that, you know, every time you throw something into the trash and you don't make the effort into trying to recycle it, it is literally going to cost you. I don't know how successful that was. I know it made a huge splash at one time, but are there places that have had real success? I'll start with Mayor Myers on that one, but I'd like to hear everyone's thoughts.
You've got me on this one because I really don't have the answer of which city is making the biggest splash in the Midwest on that.
Were there communities, though, that you looked at as a model for Greenwood?
Yeah. When we looked around with the different communities, we bid out our process, first of all, through the different companies. We've looked at what goes on around Central Indiana, but I travel quite a bit around the United States with the U.S. Conference of Mayors or the National League of Cities. Seattle's a very good one to look at. But, you know, what really shocked me and surprised me the most was when I went to Japan a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Their recycling is absolutely amazing. They're on top of it. And I think they have, somebody told me, like 10% trash, and the rest is all recyclable material. And they are very on the ball. And that's one of those things that sparked me, is seeing how well they could do it. And I know if they can do it, then we can do it. And that's why we're pushing it so hard in Greenwood.
Greg, I see you and Allison passing notes back and forth, so I'm going to go with you.
I'm going to let Allison jump in on this, and she's got the better story here, I think, I'd tell.
All right, go Allison.
So in as far as across the country goes, Seattle is a great example of where recycling has become very successful. And the reason for that is because residents and elected officials, the community at large in Seattle, for years have really made investments in ongoing education to the public about why to recycle, how to recycle, and what it provides their community in terms of economic benefit and environmental quality benefit. So they have had a deeply invested community when it comes to recycling, and that shows in their recycling rates and their practices. And that's part of the reason they were able to go to a system where the recycling bin was larger than the trash bin. A gentleman recently moved to Indianapolis named David Johnson, and he explained to me that in Seattle, recycling was almost a competitive sport among neighbors, because it was seen as a badge of honor if you could minimize your waste and increase your recycling. So here in central Indiana, Bloomington is a really great example of a community that's done well for recycling. And they do it in a variety of ways, but they're similarly, they've made investments in education.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about recycling programs here in central Indiana. Gotten an email from a listener named Benjamin, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Benjamin writes, if I'm not mistaken, China is our largest importer of used recyclables. Recently, I read that China drastically reduced the amount it was importing because the recyclables were contaminated and or not clean upon arrival. I can only assume that we export our recyclables to other countries because of both market demand and a lack of infrastructure here in the United States to handle the amount we throw out. If our number one importer is scaling down its imports, what kind of cascade effect is that having on the U.S.? Are we simply speeding up the rate at which we create landfills? Do your guests feel there is a demand to build more U.S.-based recycling plants? I'll throw that one first to Greg.
Thank you, because that's a very good question, and he's kind of nailed it. You know, the commodity markets have gone down. Those bales that we talked about coming out of the MRFs are increasingly getting a half penny a pound, or, you know, there's just very little money in the back end, which puts pressures on innovative cities like Seattle and to be able to continue to fund it without raising the prices. So here in Indiana, a good example of a market that's gone up is steel. We make about 85% of the steel that comes out of the state is recycled steel. So I have more we're having more drive for steel than ever before. And steel can be a little bit dirtier than it would have been in the past because the market is so strong. Where before plastic could be we could move some of the peanut butter jars and things like that in with the bales, you know, that's no longer the case because China doesn't have the need. So it really comes down, you know, if we had more picnic tables being made here in Indiana and other items that are made out of recycled material, like we're doing with steel, which is our great success story that we don't talk about enough, we would have more need for this. And those bales that are coming out of the MRFs would have more revenue on them, and there'd be less need for cities to raise the cost of recycling. But it has to be subsidized somewhere.
We've got an email from a listener. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. This email asks about how rural Johnson County can get recycling back. We don't have it anymore. okay. Mayor Myers, I know you're leaning away from the microphone, but I think you're the Johnson County representative here. So
I am, and I'm happy to say that, you know, I do sit on the County Recycling Board as their chairman. And we did stop recycling last year. We had a problem with losing a lot of the sites. It's hard to find locations where we have a site where we can put the recycling bins and keep them there. But then secondly, when we put it out to bid, the price almost doubled for the recycling for the county. They don't have the same option that the city does for that. And so the county's budget is really hard hit when it came to that. With the multitudes of problems that we had, we stopped it for a while, and we are regrouping right now and trying to redo the entire process. We're looking at two locations that could be manned 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, so that we don't have some of the problems that we've been having. One of the big problems we had at our recycle sites were people were dumping their trash there, mm-hmm. TVs, electronics, things that shouldn't be going in there. They were dumping their mattresses. And some of those sites were very public sites, and we'd have to have people drive by every day and clean up the sites. So it was really not cost effective to the county itself for that. We are working now as a board to start that process over again. So we're hoping to have something up and running, and if you look at the County Recycle District's website, you'll see where that's going to be.
Allison, is this a population down? I mean, is it affected by the number of people? I mean, Johnson County actually is a fairly well-populated place. Even in mm-hmm. the parts of it we consider rural, it's not. But there are some parts of the state where there just aren't a whole lot of people, period. And is it difficult, A, to encourage people to recycle there, and even if they want to,
yeah.
to make it worthwhile for someone to do it.
Yeah, so the state of Indiana is blessed with solid waste management districts that cover, their jurisdictions cover all counties of the state aside from Allen County and Marion County. And those are really the boots on the ground at the local government level for providing recycling to folks in their communities, both rural and in smaller and larger cities. So, Those entities are the ones that provide and man the drop-off recycling locations. They're the ones that are the brokers for that material in their communities, and they're the ones that provide the education and the resources for their community members to understand how and where to recycle. So state of Indiana, no matter where you live, you have a resource available to you to teach you how to recycle and where to take it.
Go ahead, Greg.
If I could jump in, we earlier this or back in 18 in the spring, we did a big project with Cook Medical where they picked up the cost of this heavy trash, like the TVs and, you know, tanning beds we even got. And they really spread out through Spencer and Owen County and many of these underserved areas. So we're going back to Cook. We'll do another one this year. And I can't say enough about what Cook Medical's done to pick up this cost in these rural counties. But to really reach out to Cummins and Subaru and some of our other big organizations here, Lilly, that can get involved in sponsoring these major recycling events where they're picking up the cost. Because that big TV, that mattress has a cost to process it. And, of course, it also gives us a chance to create jobs for those coming home from prison like we do. And so I think there's some real good opportunities to get major corporations involved in this recycling because there's a double benefit.
Yeah, we probably ought to point out, because we did the show earlier on Recycle Force, that your concept is that you don't just recycle materials, you help recycle human beings, too, that they get a fresh chance in life. We are talking about recycling here in central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Scott has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Scott, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, John.
Certainly.
Appreciate the opportunity to call in today.
Sure.
And shout out to my fellow board member, Executive Director Allison Mitchell. So this question was more directed towards Lori. I'm excited and thrilled to hear of your organization's desire to improve recycling. And
I should jump in. Lori's not with us anymore. She can only join us for the first segment.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
I can try your question, Scott.
Yeah, go ahead and throw it to Allison.
Okay. Allison, the intent was to just ask Lori to sort of see where Cummins is currently at in their recycling and waste reduction efforts and program, and whether they were open to consulting with the IRC and some of its partner members to help them so that they don't have to actually reinvent the wheel, so to speak, in piloting their program and trying to figure it out like we did without a roadmap. Several years ago.
Don't know that I can.
Thanks very much for the call, Scott.
Thanks, John.
Any question? Go ahead, Allison.
I don't know that I can answer that directly because I don't work for Cummins. But what I can tell you is that Cummins is a perfect example of where a major corporation in a community has come in and partnered with the community to provide recycling in Columbus because they really feel strongly that recycling is a part of quality of life in a community. And their employees want to recycle at work and they want to recycle at home as well. And Cummins is has been a fantastic partner with the city of Columbus to help them implement a curbside recycling program and provide the education that, like I mentioned, in Seattle and here in Bloomington, Indiana, really pays it pays dividends in terms of the success of a program. So Cummins is doing really great things when it comes to exemplifying that public-private partnership.
Is the next wave of this in terms of recycling, at least what I heard Lori talking about, and I may be oversimplifying here, is that we have to stop doing recycling simply as an after-the-fact thing, we have to begin to plan and sort of the conceptualization of packaging and products and all of that to say, okay, these things are going to be used over and over and over again, and we need to build them that way. I see everybody nodding their heads here on that one, but I'll start with Greg on that.
And I would expand because the packaging is so keen. But even what the mayor of Indianapolis has recently done in expanding for the pickups and the how we're getting more involved in the solid waste systems here, breaking down the silos. So people coming out of prison have a big cost. We have a cost to monitor and watch them. But as they work, they become healthier and better. And where we can break these silos and see, you know, prison reentry as a part of our recycling, where, like I said earlier, we're taking the things we throw away and doing double whammies with it. The more we can do that, the more impacts we're going to have.
Mayor Myers.
You know, it's kind of funny. We were talking about this in the lobby downstairs. Whenever we try to train the public over again, it's baby steps. And we're taking people from a generation where we did not recycle, where everything went in the trash, and we're slowly working to get people up to it. But yes, I think it's my responsibility as a government leader. It's a responsibility of the public to teach the others what not only just recycling, but pollution, everything that we're doing today, how it's going to affect the future generations, and we need to be the ones that start that campaign. We've already started it in Johnson County. We're doing a good job with it, but we need to do it statewide.
Allison.
Yeah, so everyone's familiar with the phrase reduce, reuse, recycle. Recycle is at the end of that phrase for a reason. Mm. The most beneficial impact you can have is to not create waste, so reduce, and then reuse, and recycling is at the end. So people are becoming more aware of their impacts. You see campaigns to do no straws. That's in the reduce category. Mm-hmm. People are aware and they want to do better, and that goes back to looking at the purchases they make and putting pressure on manufacturers and product designers to create products that sort of mirror their values when it comes to their consumptive behaviors.
So really, the next wave of this is to be more deliberative, not just about recovering stuff, but saying, okay, this is going out there into the world, and we need to make sure that it can be reclaimed. How long do you think it's going to take for that change to take root? Allison, and I'm only going to give you about 10 seconds to answer it.
Hopefully within my generation.
Okay, well, you look pretty young to me, so that might take a little while. We are talking today on No Limits about recycling programs here in Central Indiana. My guests are Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, and Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about recycling programs here in Central Indiana. My guests are Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling with Recycle Force, and Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers. If you want to join the conversation, there's several ways you can do it. I'm going to ask, though, because I've got a full phone bank right now of calls and a bunch of emails and messages from Facebook and Twitter and all of that, that everyone, both the people who are presenting questions either by phone or other means, and our guests, try to be as tight as possible so that everyone gets a chance. I'm going to start with an email from a listener named Hannah. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Dear Professor Kroll, she starts, now, if you're listening to the show, you can call me John. My name's John. I live in South Broad Ripple, just south of 52nd Street, and we are not offered recycling bins along with our trash cans, but those that live across 52nd Street are provided with bins. We do have the option to pay for a recycling bin, but do any of your guests know if, when household recycling will be provided for all Indianapolis homes at no charge? Also, gives you a shout out, Mayor Myers says, Greenwood Mayor Myers, go Greenwood Mayor Myers, for offering leaf pickup. As a homeowner with many trees in our yard, that service would be wonderful. So I'll start with Allison, I think, on the first part.
Sure. Thanks for your question, Hannah. Yes, currently City of Indianapolis residents are able to subscribe to curbside recycling through Republic Services. And you also could do drop-off locations. Those are information about that's located on the City of Indianapolis' website. But when it comes to the future of recycling in Indianapolis, through the Thrive Indianapolis plan, which recently was released to the public, they have set out the goal to provide comprehensive curbside recycling for all Indianapolis residents by 2025. I know that sounds like a long ways away, but there's a lot of work between now and then to get there.
Mayor Myers, what does it cost a community to offer recycling just as part of the services provided to residents?
Actually, the recycling portion of it is free for Johnson, for
Greenwood.
Total, it goes on our trash bill. It's picked up by Best Way Trash, and that bill's $15 a month if you live in the city.
Okay, so it's part of the comprehensive service, but if it were, let's just say, it were part of your tax bill, what does it cost a community to do? I mean, at $15, and you said there were what?
Like 20,000.
20,000 residents. If you do the math, then that's a solid six figure.
Yes, it is. But that also goes towards the trash pickup. And if the way I look at it, too, is we talk to other residents that live outside of the city and don't have the option of that, just their regular trash bills are quite a bit higher a month.
What do you do with the stuff you recycle? Are they able to? You know, it seems to me that, as Greg has pointed out, there's a way to make some money off of this, right?
Yeah, Best Way takes theirs to a sorting facility. They do the same as what Allison described earlier. They take it to a sorting facility, and they have bidders that take it from there.
We are talking about recycling programs here in Central Indiana on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Christina has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
So I recently started a nonprofit that involves recycling here in Indianapolis with four other young professionals. We're called Cans for Killy, and we're recycling 1.2 million aluminum cans in Indianapolis to eco-fund a trip to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
Wow. Cool. That's cool.
Where did you get the idea for that?
Yeah, we're very excited.
Where did you get the idea for that, Christina?
I consider myself the luckiest girl in the world. One of those reasons was I was fortunate enough to go on a trip to Antarctica that discussed climate change impacts. And a lot of what's been discussed on the show rung true with me in that effort that in Indiana, we don't really see a lot of the environmental impacts that you might see elsewhere, especially in more coastal areas where you might see some of those impacts of plastic and things like that. But really, it was the shift in mindset of seeing recyclables as a resource rather than as trash itself. And I know we've talked about the prices and fluctuations, selling to other countries, things like that, but knowing that aluminum could be a monetary value that could allow us to take a trip, and actually we'll be doing some reforestation efforts on Kilimanjaro as well, changed our perception. And We've had some really awesome opportunities to see, you know, get a great response from people. But I found it interesting to hear about the perceptions and the change of generations, because my generation, I do believe, is very invested, you know, as millennials in the recycling efforts. But it is a different perspective because it's no longer needed. So I would love to hear a little bit more from the panel here about what they're doing to reshape perceptions now that we don't live in, fortunately, in an era like the Great Depression, where, you know, recycling and green efforts happened because everything was needed to be viewed as a resource.
Yeah.
And we're more in a luxury format now, and what we can do to encourage people to see it as a still valuable option.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'm going to take the liberty of reframing it ever so slightly that pays tribute some ways to what you've done, and throw this one to Greg. I'm wondering also how much of this problem and this change can come from, what amounts to startups, enterprises such as yours, Greg, or not-for-profits, either commercial, for-profit, or not-for-profit.
Thank you. We call what we're doing social enterprise, where and when we say profit, I want to be clear that it's not profitable. There's a revenue stream, but we're still running this at a loss. There still has to be subsidy. And so I just think that's our future with a lot of this. I really encourage you to Google the Can Lady, Indianapolis East Side Lady, that's been doing similar projects like this for years. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And, aluminum has some value. It's much better than plastic PET bottles. And I wish you well. This is wonderful. This is the things that make an old man like me excited about you young people.
Gotten a question from a listener on Twitter. And again, you can find us on Twitter at WFYI. This listener writes, John, do your panelists know of any organizations or companies in Central Indiana that collect and recycle fabric scraps? Example, clothing not suitable for Goodwill. Are there any companies that take old mattresses? Allison.
Mattresses is such a challenge. Yeah. There's not a facility in Central Indiana, and actually not in the state at all, that takes mattresses. And that brings up the point of the responsibility of product designers and manufacturers to think about the full life cycle of their product. So as consumers, we have an opportunity and really a responsibility to send a strong message to the manufacturing and product design product brands to show that what we want is materials that can be recycled, reused, or just reduces the amount of materials consumed in their products. So the other question was, remind me, regarding...
I think you tackled it pretty much. It was mattresses the big one, and also fabric scraps.
Fabrics, yeah.
Yeah, things that you can't get.
We're not aware of anything on fabrics. You know, the Tox Drop years ago in the city added electronics to their list. It was at the time, 2007, it was a hugely bold move. But these are the things, until we can get to that new manufacturer responsibility to make things better, we do have big issues. So not to put too much pressure on the mayor and the Tox Drop, but that would be a wonderful item to add into our collection efforts if we ever can get to that point. But it's complicated to do it, because there are steel frames. The steel market would take those, but you still have to handle the fabric. And there's virtually, to the best of our knowledge, no real recycling. There's all kind of
reuse
things.
Yeah, insulation.
Don't want us to spend a lot of time, because we get a lot of calls, emails, and other things here that I want to deal with. But are mattresses the biggest barrier here to recycling? Or what are some of the other things that... that are proving resistant to
big,
entering
big
into
televisions. Big
construction old, and demolition waste
yeah,
as
demolition
well.
Demolition waste, yep.
That's a major contributor to greenhouse gases in landfills.
So those are the places, those are the things that, where have we made the most progress, would you say, in the past decade?
In Central Indiana?
Yeah. Well, or elsewhere, because I'm assuming one of the
consumers.
Things with us. Consumers.
Consumers are really starting to voice their concerns, and product brands are listening. You see companies going away with straws, and they're rethinking packaging, and they are trying Starbucks providing the sippy cup lid as opposed, there are things that corporations are doing in response to what they're hearing from consumers, and the millennial generation is a big part of that. So I think that's really where we've seen the movement, and where there's tremendous opportunity that I want people to lean into their responsibility.
For
and
us,
role
we're
there.
Seeing retail returns where big manufacturers or stores are having retail returns of recycling those items, which is a big change where it used to landfill. And we're hoping Amazon, with the increasing, we're buying the stuff and we're being returned here, we would like to see Amazon step up bigger in this retail return recycling market.
We are talking about recycling efforts and programs here in Central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Michael has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Michael, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I wanted to kind of dovetail off the last question about the economics. It seems to me that I'm in Indianapolis. I'm not going to mention the company that collects the recycling here, but I'm sure your guests are familiar. It seems to me that I'm paying for the right to pre-sort what is a valuable resource that is collected curbside, which is convenient, and then that resource is taken and then sold by the collectors. And I was wondering if any of the proceeds from that go to mitigate the overall trash collection contract cost for the city, or if that just gets pocketed. I'm not trying to indict a corporation necessarily, but I just want to know, you know, how do those reconcile? Because it seems to me if you were throwing away a perfectly good resource like that from the trash, the company would still have an incentive to try and pull that out of the regular trash stream anyway and then resell it. So really, we're paying to separate it for them, and I was wondering if that has any net positive result on our overall trash bill.
Let me toss that one to the mayor. I'm sure he's dealt with it. Thanks very much for the call, Michael.
Thank you.
Michael, thanks for the question. And I can't answer for the city of Indianapolis on how they mitigate theirs. But I can tell you that for our city, that is why we went with the larger 96-gallon bins versus the 18-gallon totes, is it does help mitigate the price of our trash collection and allows our residents to have a lower trash bill every month. So they offset each other. And I know that our company does take them to a sorting facility. I've been to the sorting facility to see how it works. It absolutely amazed me to watch the machines in process. And then at the end of the line, you actually have humans sorting the rest of it that didn't get tossed out. So it gives people jobs. It goes back into the community that way. It helps mitigate the price of the trash collection, the garbage collection, and the disposal of that garbage. And it also helps stop the pollution. With us, we're running trucks on our recycle trucks every other week instead of weekly. So you're cutting down that much more of a carbon filter that we're putting on the ground.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Larray. And again, if you want to send us an email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Similar theme. Larray writes, we are letting companies manufacture products and make money, but leaving the problem of disposing or recycling up to the consumer and government agencies. Why don't we require companies to include a recycling or reuse plan with their products? They are benefiting from sales, but being let off the hook from the consequences of those sales. Allison, you're nodding your head. Is that part of the next wave, really, of thinking this through?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to think about materials as a full circle cycle. And there's extraction and typical, you know, manufacturing and then consumption and then typically to the trash. And that is not a closed loop. So taking it to a fully closed loop means that all components of that cycle have to be in conversation with each other so that the system will work efficiently. And the beginning of that really is product design such that it can be closed. The loop can be closed on those materials and they can go back into circulation, remanufactured, recycled, reused, or just made more durable so that we're producing less waste.
Go ahead.
I'll jump in real quick. We are doing that. It's starting to happen. We still have a long way to go, like starting with how we package these materials. But we've been working with these retail returns from some major, major companies. When we started doing this back in 2012, we were literally the only one who was taking this material stream. It is now broken up. There's several companies now handling the retail returns from, you know, everything from a toothbrush to a curling iron. So it's starting to happen, and this is coming from consumer pressure to not throw this stuff away.
We're talking about recycling programs here in central Indiana. Cindy, you're on the air. Cindy, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's on your mind?
Sorry.
And I'm going to ask you to be quick because we're bumping up on time.
Where can we recycle styrofoam in Indianapolis?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Mm-hmm. I'll throw that one. Allison, it looks like you.
Yeah, so that cannot go in your curbside bin, so please don't put it there. Put it in, save it up, and when you get a load, drive it. I know this is not a popular answer, but Heritage Materials Management, you can go to their website. They have a bin where they accept styrofoam, and styrofoam types can be different, so check with them. Give them a call. They have hours of operation where you can drive in and put that in a bin.
And in the past, Easter Seals Crossroads has tried to do another great social enterprise that's tried to do a little bit of this work, too. I know they have a densifier.
So let me ask this, because we're getting an awful lot of how-to questions here. How do we do this? There's a will to get it done. We have got just a little bit more than a minute left here to deal with this. If they have a question about how to recycle something, I'm going to give everybody a shot. In Greenwood, where would they reach out, Mayor Myers?
Reach out to the Johnson County Solid Waste District in Franklin, and they could tell the people wherever they could want to take that to.
And do they do that by phone, or is it a URL? Or?
Both. It's either by phone. It's online. Sadly, I don't have their URL right in front of me.
The other thing I'm going to ask all of you is, clearly with this much interest, the conversation will continue after we're over. Would you mind going on to our Facebook page and continuing to answer questions there after we get off the air?
And we'll take them at info@recycleforce.org.
You'll take them at info?
We'll take questions there. What, you know, these how-to, what we can help the people with and what we can't.
And can people just show up and drop stuff off?
They sure can, but we'd like them to, before they bring their massive styrofoam, to call us first because that's an item we couldn't take very easily.
Okay, and Allison.
Yeah, so the Indiana Recycling Coalition maintains a database of where you can recycle what in what parts of the state, and that's called Recycle Search on our website. But our website is indianarecycling.org, and you can go there and ask your questions about recycling. You can also interact with us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and ask those types of questions there. And you can also call our office. If you're a Marion County resident, we encourage you to call the City of Indianapolis for those questions, too.
That's going to have to be the last word. We've had a lively conversation with my guest, Allison Mitchell, Greg Kiesling, and Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers. I want to thank our listeners also for some great questions and comments and invite them to come back next Tuesday when we're going to be talking about the federal government shutdown. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator Scott McAllister. Technical Producers Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.